Murder is always a tragedy. There is always a broken family. When someone's brother, sister, son, or daughter loses their life, there is a whole world of pain and repercussions behind the scenes. But what happens when a single family is targeted by murderers not once, not twice, but three separate times? Well, let's find out, shall we? I'm Andrew Kitchen, and I'm with co-host Farouk Edu.
Hi.
And Gurleen Batar.
Hello.
Welcome to Six Murders. On this podcast, we will be exploring six murders
over 6 weeks,
all of which took place in the six.
These are some of Toronto's highest profile and most notorious cases. Buckle up, let's dive in.
This story starts with a happy couple, Bill and Bridget Harrison. They started dating in the 1960s, and they fell in love backstage at the Stratford Shakespeare Festival. They got married 9 years later. Unable to have children of their own, they adopted a sweet, pudgy little boy, Caleb, in 1973. Together, the three of them built a contented little family. In 1975, they moved to a sleepy little neighborhood in Toronto at 3635 Pitch Pine Crescent. That home became a family hub, a meeting place for large dinners and holiday events. Relatives described Bill and Bridget as a pair of passionate and steady souls. People were captivated by their generous nature and their sage advice. But the funny thing about 3635 Pitch Pine Crescent is that the inhabitants kept dying under mysterious circumstances.
And we'll get back to those mysterious circumstances in just a minute. But first, we need to tell you about the rest of the cast of characters. We need to tell you about Caleb and the woman in his life. See, Caleb grew into a young man. He developed a career in the shipping and receiving industry, and in 2000, he noticed the receptionist at his workplace. Caleb, then 27, and Melissa Merritt, then 19, started dating. She was the daughter of a policeman, an animal lover, very serious about finding a husband and starting a family. Within a few months, Caleb told his parents that they were planning on having kids. 3 years later, the couple was married and they had a couple of children. But the warning signs of a disastrous marriage were starting to emerge.
Melissa appeared to be more emotionally unstable as time went by. Things started to unravel, such as Melissa lying to the whole family about having ovarian cancer in the spring of 2004. By that point, the couple had already been in and out of family court multiple times relating to issues such as Caleb's drinking and financial troubles. In 2005, there was an assault allegation. Caleb claimed he was acting in self-defense when Melissa started gouging and scratching. Melissa's side of the story was that Caleb had trapped her in a headlock and beaten her several times to the face. It was this event that officially ended their relationship. Caleb moved back in with his parents in good old Pitch Pine Crescent, and Melissa kept the kids, refusing to share custody.
But the madness does not end there. Only 1 month after the breakup, Caleb drove home drunk from a party and smashed into a taxi head-on. The driver was killed and four passengers had serious injuries. Caleb was charged with drunk driving causing death, but he was released on bail under the condition that he lived with his parents. Only a few weeks after that, Melissa called the police and reported that she'd been attacked by an intruder at her home. She pointed the finger at Caleb, not knowing that Caleb was still recovering from injuries sustained during the drunken driving accident, and he couldn't walk without crutches. This attempt at framing Caleb may or may not reappear as a recurring theme in the story.
And over the next coming weeks and months, Melissa reported several more break-ins at her home. But the police soon became convinced that she was just making the whole story up. Over the next couple of years, a judge would grant Caleb 50-50 custody of the children, and Melissa would remarry. Her new husband was Christopher Fattori, a former bouncer. In March 2009, Caleb began serving an 18-month prison sentence for that drunk driving charge, and his share of the custody of the children was transferred to Nana and Papa, Bill and Bridget Harrison. The grandparents simply adored having the kids around. but that joy would not last long. On April 16th, 2009, Bridget arrived home to find the house. Lights off, the TV on, a half-eaten takeout meal on the coffee table, but no sign of Bill. She noticed a locked bathroom door. So she picked the lock and she found her husband Bill dead on the floor.
She called 911 and police came to collect evidence. They noticed abrasions on Bill's neck and the autopsy revealed that he was in perfect health, but the police still declared that he died of natural causes. Interestingly, the autopsy also revealed that he had a broken sternum. Bridget was shocked by the results of the autopsy, but she had more to be worried about. The kids were missing. Melissa had left town with them.
Melissa kidnapped the kids and took them on a cross-country escapade. But they were eventually found. Melissa was charged with child abduction, and the children were returned to Pitch Pine Crescent. On April 21st, the day before the abduction hearing was set to begin, Caleb's son arrived at his grandparents' house to find his grandmother, Bridget, dead at the bottom of the stairs, lying face up with her head resting on the bottom step. Almost exactly 1 year after Bill's death, his wife followed him to the afterlife. In contrast to Bill, Bridget's death was ruled suspicious. The autopsy revealed broken bones in the neck, abrasions, and petechial hemorrhaging, broken blood vessels, which suggest neck compression. From the get-go, friends and family had an issue with Melissa, who had a history of erratic and deceitful behavior. But the police targeted Caleb, who had a strained relationship with his mother and also had the drunk driving charge on his record. Not to mention the assault allegations, thanks to Melissa. Police questioned and investigated Christopher Fattore, Melissa's new husband, but critically, they had failed to check one aspect of his alibi. And ultimately, despite all the madness and evidence pointing towards foul play, the police ruled Bridget's death an unfortunate fall down the stairs.
On August 23, 2013, police were called to investigate another dead body at 3635 Pitch Pine Crescent. If this is beginning to sound like deja vu, you're beginning to get this picture. Caleb Harrison was found dead in his bedroom under the sheets. He had been beaten and strangled. This time, the police had no choice but to rule this as a homicide. Finally, there might be justice for the Harrison family. Only days earlier, Melissa had filed for a full custody of the children, and the hearing was set to begin in a few days. Do you see the pattern here? Because it is painfully obvious now. Within weeks, Melissa and Chris had disappeared with the children again on their way to Nova Scotia.
Okay, so we've got two dead grandparents and one dead father at this point, and multiple attempts to flee the province with the children. In January 2014, more than 6 months after Caleb's body was discovered, police walked through the snow to the front door of Melissa and Chris Fattore's new home in Italy Cross, a small Nova Scotia community. They were arrested, and they were charged with the murders of Caleb and Bridget Harrison. And later that night, after more than 13 hours of investigation, Chris Fattore would confess. In his confession, Chris Fattore would claim that Melissa had nothing to do with any of the murders, and she didn't even know about them. But on their way back to Ontario, the couple would be left alone together in a small room, and they began to discuss their situation. Little did they know that there was a recording device in that room. It was this recording which provided the evidence the police needed to charge Chris and Melissa with the murders of Caleb and Bridget Harrison.
Police had all the signs out there, but somehow missed blatant evidence. Police later found a laptop with internet search history that included Googling, how long does it take for someone to die from choking, and easy ways to kill and get away with it. If the police had conducted a thorough investigation into Bridget's death and obtained search warrants, this evidence would have been available to them. Unfortunately, many family members, friends, and experts believe that some of the Harrison family may still be living today if the police had performed adequate investigations. Both Melissa and Chris received mandatory life sentences with the possibility of parole until 25 years. Till this day, there has been no justice for Bill.
And that wraps it up for this episode of Six Murders. Thank you for listening. We all truly love and appreciate your support. Be sure to tune in next week to learn about the twisted case of Paul Bernardo and Carla Homolka, who both abducted girls as a couple and sexually terrorized them before murdering them. Until next time, cheers, Toronto.